Hello, I'm Beth. Most of you know me, but there are a few new faces here, so I thought I'd introduce myself. I am Adam's wife. Adam's our church leader here. I also sit on the leadership team for this church, River Maidenhead. I also work for River. My whole life is River Church, basically. I also work for River Church. I head up our children and families ministry with some wonderful, wonderful people, and I get to hang out with the best people ever, which is the kids. And I'm also mum to Isaac. So yeah, usually you'd find me out there with the kids. Occasionally I get released and downgraded to talk to the adults. I'm kidding, you're not a downgrade, I promise. So yeah, it's wonderful to be with you this morning. A couple of things you need to know about me. Firstly, I am very aware that I speak quite fast, and I promise you, I try really hard to slow down. But my brain, it goes a million miles an hour, and apparently my mouth tries to keep up. So I will try to slow down. If at any point you just go, give me a wave and I'll just slow it all down. Okay, there we go. I shall slow down. There we go. The other thing is, during the talk, my ears will get pinker and pinker and pinker. So by the end, my ears, for some reason, just get boiling hot. So you can watch out for that and be like, oh, there they go. Fantastic. So we are in a new series called The Stars and the Sand, which, if you know your Genesis story, you will recognize that that was part of a promise that God made to a man called Abraham. God promised Abraham that he would give him a land of his own. He promised that his descendants, his offspring, would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the shore, which is a lot, by the way. He promised that Abraham's descendants would be blessed in order so that they could be a blessing to others. And a lot of the Old Testament is the story of Abraham's family and how God brought about that promise, warts and all, because there are a lot of warts in Abraham's family. So last week, Dan introduced us to Abraham and introduced us to this promise that you can see up there. So you can see on the screen, we're going to be following the promise through the generations right up until they take possession of the land that God promised. That's a spoiler alert for towards the end of the series. So today we're going to talk very briefly about Abraham's son Isaac. And in a lot more detail, we're going to be walking through the story of Jacob, who is Isaac's son. I'm going to approach this talk a bit differently to how I would normally do a talk. Normally, you know, we have some points, we throw a few Bible verses in along the way. Well, this time I'm going to take you through the story of Jacob. Now, it's a long one, so I'm going to go as fast and slowly as possible to take us through that story this morning. So buckle in, because it's going to be quite a ride. So Abraham has received this promise from God, and after years of struggling to conceive, he's like, how on earth is this promise going to happen if I can't even have a son of my own? Abraham tries to anticipate or tries to manipulate how he thinks God is going to make this promise of descendants as numerous as the stars happen. And so he sleeps with his wife's servant. She has a son, and God is like, nope, not him. That was not the promise. My way is better. And so Sarah, at 90 years old, gets pregnant. Oh, as someone who has given birth, I don't think I'd want to do that at 90. But 90 years old, and God brings the first step of that promise, and Sarah gets pregnant with Isaac. Now, God doesn't just go, okay, I've passed on the message to Abraham. This is the promise. And then, Abraham, you can just pass on the message to the next lot. God reaffirms his promise, his covenant with Isaac. And you can see on the screen the promise that God made to Isaac. It's very similar. It's pretty much identical to the one that he made to Abraham. And Isaac was actually in a very similar situation to Abraham. Isaac and his wife Rebekah struggled again to conceive. And so there's that same thing of, God, you've promised us descendants as numerous as the sand on the earth, and yet I can't even have a baby. But unlike his father, and as we will see later, also his son, Isaac trusted God. And rather than trying to take things into his own hands and manipulate the situation so that this promise was fulfilled, he took it straight back to the source. He prayed to God on Rebekah's behalf. He said, God, we need a baby. And God gave him a baby. This reminded me, many years ago, I was on an island called Vanuatu. Sounds very exotic. It is very exotic. It's somewhere in the Pacific. And there's lots of beaches because it's an island. And I was walking on the beach, and there are also a lot of dogs, like wild dogs. And there was this quite nice wild dog that just came up to me. And I was like, okay, dog, we'll play. So I picked up a stick and I threw it for him. And the dog ran off to it, and he's like, And he grabs it. And then rather than bring it back to me so that I could throw it again, he ran off in the opposite direction. He took the stick and he started chewing it, and then he started burying it, and then he took it over and dropped it in the sea, and it started floating away. And he's like, oh no, hang on, come back, and he gets the stick. And eventually, after a long time of doing his own thing, he brings it back to my feet, and he's like, okay, I'm ready. And I threw it out again. And I felt really clearly God say to me in that moment, Beth, you are that dog. I give you things. I make you promises. I give you things. I throw it out. And the wise thing to do would be to bring it straight back to my feet. But you don't do that. You go off. You do your own thing for a little while. You try to make those things that I've promised you happen. And my desire for you is for you to bring it straight back to my feet so I can pick up that stick, pick up that promise, and I can throw it out to you again in the right direction. And we can keep doing that. Every single time I throw it out to you, you bring it back. I say, we're going this way. I throw it out to you, you bring it back. And so this story of Isaac, you know, he was the dog that brought the stick back to God. Abraham didn't. Eventually he did, but he did his own thing. And as we will discover later, Jacob, who we're talking about today, he didn't. But Isaac knew that actually the person that gave him the promise, the best person to bring it back to. Now, I'm not saying that we wait for God's promises to drop into our lap. As Dan said last week, this isn't a passive thing. God's promises require us to do things that we talked about this morning. But it's about coming back to God over and over again and laying everything at his feet and listening to what he tells us to do. So Isaac and Rebecca do get pregnant, and they get pregnant with twins. How exciting. And here enters our main character for today. I was chatting to Dan in the week about this talk, and he said that when he started reading about Jacob, all the other Bible characters up to this point seemed rather dull in comparison, and it's very true. This guy has got some character. So when Jacob and his brother Esau, the twins, were still in Rebecca's womb, they started to fight. And God told Rebecca, two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. I love this description. I think it's brilliant. So they named him Esau. And after this, his brother came out with his hand grasping at Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Jacob and Esau. So we see from these verses that even before they were born, God had chosen who was going to pass that promise to and this blessing on to. And God often goes against the norm. He goes against the grain. It would have been expected that Esau, as the older twin, the older brother, would have been the recipient of this blessing. But once again, God says, no, that's not my way. This is what we're doing. My way is better. Now, full disclosure, I grew up in church. I grew up hearing about these Bible characters, and I assumed that they were the gold standard for how to live. That they were good people. They were God's chosen people. So they were the good people, the people who were honest and faithful and loved God and obeyed him. And then I read the story of Jacob. And I was like, well, okay. So bearing in mind that he is one of the patriarchs, the kind of fathers of the Jewish faith, the Christian faith, and I believe also the Muslim faith. But Jacob, I mean, even his name, it literally means supplanter. So supplanter means someone who supersedes or replaces another person, especially by force or treachery. So there's a king over here, and this guy's like, oh, I want to be king. And so using force and treachery and deceit, he takes the kingdom, the kingship from the king. That is a supplanter, there we go. So that is what Jacob's name means, someone who grabs and takes what he wants from another. He literally came out grabbing his brother's heel. I mean, that's quite an efficient way of getting out, I suppose. So Jacob lived up to his name. He was a deceiver, a trickster, as we'll see in this story, but he was also the one chosen by God to carry this promise forward. So Esau was this big, hairy guy who loved hunting and smelled like dirt. We all know those people, don't we? The outdoorsy people. Okay. And Jacob was a bit more of a homebody. He liked being at home, being clean, being dry, being warm. I'm a homebody. Okay. So one day, Esau came in from hunting. He was a hunter, and he was starving hungry. Now, this was bad planning on Esau's part, because I know that whenever I go out, I have to take snacks for my 2-year-old and for my 33-year-old. Because if they are going to get hungry, when they are hungry, they make bad decisions, and they're very, very grouchy. So you always take snacks with you, so you don't get to the point where they're like, rah! Okay, so Esau did some bad planning. He comes in, he's being very melodramatic, and he sees that Jacob has made this soup or stew, and he's like, give it to me or I will die of hunger. I'm so hungry, I'm starving to death. And Jacob is an opportunist and also a trickster. And he says, oh, of course, brother, you're my twin, of course I'll give you this stew. Oh, but it will cost you a little bit. It's a little bit like, has anyone seen The Little Mermaid? And she's like, I can help you, but it'll cost you your voice. And so it's like that. He says, I will give you this stew, but it will cost you. Classic sibling moment. And Jacob says, I want your birthright. Now, a birthright is what Esau would have been given as the oldest child of his father. So when his father died, he would have been given a double portion of the inheritance, but he would also inherit his father's authority as the head of the household. This is a big deal. It's Esau's entire future, and it's the future of his family. And he is so caught up in focus and focused on the immediate need right now, I am hungry, that he throws it all away and says, yeah, I will sell you my inheritance. To be fair, when Adam is hungry, I think he would probably sell his inheritance for a hobnob. So, this is the first example of Jacob grabbing at what he wanted, of supplanting his brother. Why did he do it? We don't know. Did he know about the prophecy that God had given his mum before he was born? Probably. Did he trust God to make that come to pass? Or did he feel like he had to make it happen? If that wasn't enough, later in their life, Isaac, their father, is getting old and he's going blind and possibly bedbound, and he doesn't know how much longer he's got until he is going to die. And so he says to his son Esau, by the way, Esau was Isaac's favorite son and Jacob was Rebekah's favorite son. And so he says to his son Esau, right, it's time for me to give you my blessing as the oldest son. He tells Esau to go and catch some wild game and make it into some food. Again, with the food, everything here is centered around the stomach, I feel. And then once Esau brings him this food, he will bless him. But Rebekah hears this, Jacob is her favorite son, and she wants Jacob to receive that blessing. So she schemes with Jacob to make him feel like Esau. They literally like stick goat's hair to him because Esau was a hairy man and Jacob was very smooth. So like, okay, let's do the ultimate Halloween costume and let's stick all this goat's hair to you so that if your father touches you, he can feel all of Esau's hair. And he wears Esau's clothing, because again, Esau smells like dirt. And he's like, then if your father smells you, he'll know that you are Esau. And Jacob does all this, and he does convince Isaac that he is Esau, and Isaac blesses him. And this is the blessing that Isaac gave. He thought to Esau, but actually to Jacob. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. It's interesting looking at the blessing, and then looking back at what God had said to Rebekah about her sons. Obviously here, in the blessing, it says, be Lord over your brothers. And in the promise that God gave to Rebekah, it says, one people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So Isaac did actually bring about God's blessing, albeit through the deceit of Jacob. Well, needless to say, Esau was not too happy. Everything has been taken away from him, everything about his future. And so he had planned to kill his brother. And as a result, Jacob ran away to live with his uncle. Now, when he was on the run, Jacob had a dream. And in the dream, once again, God chooses to renew his promise, not just through, oh, this is what I promised to your grandfather or your father, but God shows up and renews that promise to Jacob himself personally. He said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. What a promise. Oh, I'd like one of those. Yes, please. So in spite of Jacob's lack of trust in God's promise and him trying to take these things for himself, God reaffirms this promise and says that he will be faithful and he will remain with Jacob until all this comes to pass. And yet Jacob's response a few verses later says, "Then Jacob made a vow saying, 'If God will be with me and watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God.'" God has just made this huge promise to him. Descendants as many as the dust on the earth, spreading all over the world, blessing the whole world. In order to bless other people, you have to be blessed. He's promised blessing on Jacob. You can't give out of a place of lack. So God being with you always and bringing all of these things to fulfillment, this is the promise that God has just made. And what does he focus on? The basics. The immediate, the right now. Food, clothes, safety. Isn't it so easy for us to get bogged down with the day-to-day worries of life that we lose the big dreams and the big picture that God has got for us? Does God say, "I want you to thrive," and you just go, "God, I just want to survive"? Jacob here is trying to barter with God for his survival. He didn't need to. He was like, "If you do this, God, then you will be my God. Then I will do this." And his terms were a lot lower than God. God has given him big things. And he's like, "Just these few would be great." Let us be careful not to minimize what God might do because we are so caught up in the here and now. It's just like his brother Esau. Remember with the stew where he's like, "I'm so hungry, I'm dying." Okay. He was so caught up in the immediate, the right there, that he gave away everything about his future. Let us not be the same. Let us not do what Esau and Jacob did, which was get so caught up in our circumstances right now where we're at that we lose sight of the big promises that God has got, the big dreams that he has got for us, the big future. So continuing the story, Jacob runs away to his uncle. Whilst he was there, he marries two of his uncle's daughters. That's the whole story. His uncle honestly gives him a run for his money when it comes to deceiving and trickery. And they were like this for years and years and years, going back and forth, trying to trick each other and cheat each other. And he did start to prosper, but it came about through years of hard toil and a really uncomfortable family situation. Years later, he was unhappy living with his uncle. And so he takes his wives, he takes his cattle, he takes everything with him. And again, he runs away. And all his children as well, he takes them too. He doesn't leave them behind. And Jacob hears that his uncle is coming after him and he is scared. He's like, "Oh no, my uncle can be quite a violent person. I'm worried he's going to come and, you know, be horrible and do awful things to me." But God has made a promise to keep Jacob safe. And so God intervenes. And then Isaac hears, probably more scarily, that his brother, whom he tricked out of his inheritance and his blessing, is headed towards him with 400 men. That's fun, isn't it? Terrifying. Jacob is really, really scared now. And he prays to God and he says, "God, you made a promise to me about my descendants. My brother is coming and I'm pretty sure he's going to kill me and my wives and my children, my whole family. God, I need you to save me." And I believe that I'm right in saying this is the first time it's recorded that of Jacob praying to God. We've got a lot of times where God shows up and speaks to Jacob, but this is one of the first times that Jacob actually comes before God. Maybe he is finally starting to get it. Maybe he's finally starting to learn. Next, we have quite a strange story where Jacob spends the night literally wrestling with a stranger who turns out to be God or an angel of the Lord. And Jacob refuses to let him go until he blesses him. I don't know if this is a normal thing in like that day where, you know, you're just out at night, there's a man, "Wrestle him. Yeah, I'm not going to stop until you bless me." All very, very strange, but hey ho. The story feels like a physical manifestation of what Jacob has been doing his whole life, wrestling with God for a blessing that was already his. God had already blessed him. He'd already said, this is what I'm going to give you. And yet Jacob struggles and wrestles with him for a blessing that he's already been given. He's understood that there is a blessing to be had that is promised to him, but he won't just take it. God is offering it. He's like, here's a gift. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to take that. I'm going to fight you for it. How often do we do the same thing? God's like, I've got this for you. And you're like, oh no, God, this is too easy. I need to struggle for this a bit more. He goes through his whole life hurting everyone around him, trying to steal and scheme the blessing and abundance for himself, instead of trusting God to give it to him as a gift. And in spite of that, God remains faithful to his promise. He keeps him safe from his uncle. He keeps him safe from his brother. He brings him home. Spoiler alert, he gives his descendants the land that was promised. Now, it's during this wrestling match that God changes Jacob's name from Jacob to Israel, which means struggled with God. And that is where the nation of Israel comes from, which is still in existence today. So Jacob continues home. He tries to placate his brother, Esau, who's coming with 400 men, by sending all these animals. It's quite the story. I read it and I get a bit cross because he basically puts his family in order of his favourites. So his favourites are right at the back and his least favourites are right at the front. And he's like, if, you know, Esau comes across this lot and he gets cross and he kills them, that's fine. They're less of my favourites. But the ones at the back, they're the ones I want to keep. So the whole thing is utterly bizarre. Once again, he is trying to control the situation. He's going, I have to do this so that my brother, I give him all these gifts, loads and loads and loads of animals, so that my brother does not kill me and my family. But the gifts don't work because God has already done a work in Esau's heart and his brother welcomes him home with open arms. Okay, we're going to stop the story there. It keeps on going. It's a lot of story. But there are a few things that I have learned through looking at this story that I would like to share with you. So the first thing goes back to my Vanuatu dog beach story. When God has made us a promise, we can either choose to be like Abraham and Jacob and Beth and do our own thing and take it away and try and make it happen in our own strength. Or we can be like Isaac and bring it straight back to God's feet. We can choose our own direction or we can ask him for direction. The second point is, God wanted Jacob to thrive, not just survive. The stars represent the number of descendants that he will have. The promise he gave Jacob was huge. It was full of wonderful things. The blessing that Isaac bestowed on him when he thought he was Esau was amazing. And yet he got so caught up in surviving. Are we thriving or are we just surviving? The other thing I saw was that God stays faithful to his promises. If it were me, I would have taken one look at Jacob and gone, nope, that was a bad idea. I take it all back. But he doesn't. Which means that we can also be assured that God does not take back his promises to us either. God always, always keeps his promises. Now you might be saying, but Beth, I've never had a stars and sand moment. This is a pinky promise, if you don't know. I've never had a stars and sand promise from God. God's never promised me anything. And to that, I want to say to you, read your Bible, because it is full of promises that God has made for you and me. If you want to hear what God has to say, pray. Ask him, God, what is your blessing? What is your promise for my life? If you struggle to hear from God, then we've got people who can pray with you. He can walk alongside that with you. We've got a wonderful prayer place over there. Give us a wave, you faithful ladies. You are wonderful. And we have a prophetic team who would love to come and pray with you and help you seek God and hear from him. And the last thing I learned from Jacob is it's okay to wrestle. If we aren't sure if we believe God's promises, let's be like Jacob and wrestle with God. Let's grapple with the Bible. Let's ask questions. Let's ask the hard questions. Let's go all in. Let's not be lukewarm. It's good to wrestle with God. He can handle it. Adam and I help out at a youth camp in the New Forest, and we've got some text yesterday from one of the youth that said, I'm just going to read it to you because I find it hilarious and brilliant. Hi. How as Christians do we grapple with free will? as God gave us it, but the story of Jonah and the whale to me shows something different. Also, was Mary, mother of Jesus, an eternal virgin? As me and my Orthodox friend disagree, as the Bible shows that Jesus had siblings, but he thinks there is a technicality in it. I can forward the proof he sent if needed. And then there was another one straight after that, and I was like, whew, these are great questions. These are big questions to answer on a WhatsApp message, but these are great questions. This guy is grappling. He is wrestling. Sorry, I'll slow down. He is wrestling with God. There are many, many more things that we learn from Jacob, but we're gonna stop there. I'm really excited for where God is going to take us over the next few weeks as we continue this series and we head towards the Promised Land.